And David Bloom with us, and we're going to take your phone calls with David when we come right back now on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. David Bloom will take your calls. David, the switch over to using alcohol for fuel, what would it do for the economy in terms of new jobs? Anything?
Well, quite a bit. And this is something we've been kind of blowing the horn about, because we're trying, you know, this people deserve to have good work to do in this country. And when it comes to alcohol fuel, by not exporting energy dollars offshore and keeping them in our community, we can create a huge number of jobs. The DOE did a great study on this back in the 1980s, and they showed for every 5 billion gallons of fuel that we replace with alcohol, we'd create about almost a million jobs, 987,000 jobs. So that's not just running the plants or doing the farming, but building the parts for the plant, maintaining the plant. And then when people at the plant or on the farm spend their money, that creates all kinds of service sector jobs. So let's say, George, you decide to go in the alcohol farming business. You know, we go to buy the alcohol at a station that you've produced, and now you take our dollars and you go down to the carpenter and get a door put in your house.
Right.
So you give the alcohol money to him. He goes ahead and gets his truck fixed. The mechanic just got some of the alcohol money. The mechanic goes and, you know, sees the local veterinarian who, you know, fixes the dog, you know, and with the alcohol money. And then the veterinarian wants organic food, goes back to your farm, George, where you're taking the byproducts from the alcohol, raising fish and mushrooms and organic vegetables. So that money just marched around the community, creating wealth for everybody, creating tax, you know, on those transactions.
Sure.
And that keeps the pools open, the libraries open, the schools funded. And none of that happens when you buy oil. They just suck the money out of your community like vampires, and off to Geneva it goes. So how many jobs could we create? Well, I hope President Obama's listening, because we could probably create, based on that very conservative DOE study, 26 million permanent, non-exportable jobs, because they're based on the sunlight that falls on our crops, converted in our country to fuel our cars. What part of that are you going to export? You know, it's going to be, you know, full employment for America if we can get off of fossil fuels and get onto harnessing the sun via alcohol fuel.
Would this also work in motorcycles?
Oh, man, does it ever. I used to have this 350 Honda motorcycle back, well, too many years to really say for sure. But anyway, I broke all the cooling fins off the head because I didn't need them. Alcohol burns 300 degrees cooler than gasoline. So I used to have a lot of fun running around town on my motorcycle without cooling fins, or I could put my hand right on the exhaust pipe, which would usually tear off several layers of skin.
Absolutely.
But, you know, alcohol burns so cool that you could actually do that. In fact, on my DVD, I have a clip of pouring 151 proof rum in the tank on a smaller bike and putting my hand on the exhaust pipe, and it's quite a sight when you see that. And it's also so much quieter. When you run a Harley on alcohol, it kind of wrecks it. It makes it sound like a Japanese bike, because it that the whole harmonics of the explosions in the cylinder are different, and so it doesn't have the Harley rumble anymore. It's kind of this, you know, Jack Daniel's smooth purr, you know. So there are some disadvantages to alcohol. It kind of wrecks that rumble in the Harley, you know.
All right, let's take phone calls. You ready?
I'm always ready, George.
Let's go to Phoenix, Arizona, first of all, west of the Rockies. We've got Jerry up there. Hi, Jer.
Hey, how you doing? I'm really enjoying the show tonight.
Thanks, Jerry.
Hey, I've heard that some people making their alternative fuels at home are getting hit with taxes from the state because they're no longer buying fuel at the pumps. Is this right? Is there a way around it?
Well, there's a couple of things, Jerry. First of all, what you're usually hearing about is biodiesel, and that's a replacement for diesel fuel made from vegetable oil. So when people go ahead and go to a restaurant to get that oil, well, somebody was already getting it. You know, some company was already getting it to make into dog food or soap or whatever, and so they get a little irritated about you're taking their business away. So they ask the restaurant owner, hey, who's this guy taking your oil away? I'd like to buy some fuel from him. And then they turn you in to the tax agency to get you busted for not paying your taxes. Now, there's two answers to this question. If you're doing it with alcohol, one is, if you're using the roads, well, you know, it might be fair to pay the road tax, because after all, you're using the roads too. So that's one issue. And what the heck? If you have to pay taxes for that, maybe that's a good thing to pay taxes for. The other thing is you only pay road tax on the alcohol you use on the roads. So if you're using the alcohol in a tractor on your property, you don't pay tax on that. If you're using an alcohol in the generator on your property to make your own electricity, now, you know, that's a nice thing, too, not having to buy power from the power company. You don't pay any tax on alcohol used in your generator. Or let's say you're using alcohol to heat your home. In other words, you can replace your fuel oil with alcohol. None of those uses are subject to road tax. So I would say you should keep very good records about where you use your alcohol, and it's just amazing how much fuel your generator uses compared to your car, if you get my drift.
That's great. Yeah, keep up the good work.
Thanks.
Okay, Jerry. International line, Windsor. Here we go into Canada. Barry, you are on Coast to Coast. Hi there, Barry.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Right across the river from your old hometown.
Absolutely. Spent many days in Windsor, believe me, and nights.
Yes. Okay, David, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
I'm always glad to be here.
Back last July, I was inspired by the interview George gave you and your book, Alcohol Can Be a Gas.
Yes.
And I purchased it, read through it cover to cover, and basically I've been doing some research about the possibility of starting like a alcohol or ethanol manufacturing process, but
yes.
Just as kind of like a pilot project.
Good.
To present to some of the government officials for the province of Ontario.
And now you're in trouble.
Yeah. Well, looking for some government funding. And I know the Ontario government, actually the Canadian government's got this Cultivating for Innovative Advantage for 2009.
Okay.
Where the Agriculture and the Agri-Food Canada Service is actually making money available for these types of projects.
Great.
Reading your book's been a great source of information, but I'm wondering, is it possible like to get in touch with you where we can speak, well, one-on-one without millions of people listening?
Well, gosh, that's always possible.
Okay.
You know, I do a lot of helping out of governments and people trying to get into business. I mean, I just came back from Florida where one of my listeners is starting a company to build stills. And so, yeah, I'm pretty darn available. There's two ways to get a hold of us and more information in general about alcohol fuel. So our website is alcoholcanbeagas.com.
Yeah, I've been there actually a fair number of times.
Good, and there is a contact page there, so you can send us email. Now,
okay.
For those of you who don't use computers and you want to call us and order the book or you know have some consulting done, whatever, you can give us a ring at our toll-free number, 888-PERMACULTURE, which is 737-6228. And there's, you know, a lot of folks would rather not use their computers for any number of reasons that have to do with, you know, privacy. And so we're happy to help people on the phone, too. Now, I got to tell you, it's sometimes hard to get a hold of me because, you know, this is a revolution we're talking about here. And
yes.
You can't believe how many thousands of people are going into alcohol production. And we have a very small office with just a few people. So it might take us a while to get back to you, but we try to get back to as many people as we can with answers to their questions.
Okay. Do you plan? I know a while back you had a seminar just, I think it was just south of Chicago. Are you planning anything in the Metro Detroit area?
Detroit's on our potential list, and actually around the country, we're planning 11 of these two-day workshops around the country because the Illinois one was so successful. I mean, here's gas at less than $2 a gallon. The workshop was in the middle of nowhere. It was in Normal, Illinois, 2 hours from any city.
Yeah.
And 75 people showed up wanting to go in to making their communities independent of oil. And that's the sign for us that this country is ready to do something about it, that it's not all the United States of amnesia. You know, there's a lot of people who understand that gas prices are going through the roof and alcohol really is going to be as good as gold. And on this show, of course, that has special significance when it comes to what's of worth in the future. We even have some of our readers in Sandpoint, Idaho, that are going to start an alcohol plant and base the local currency on alcohol, on the theory that oil is the basis behind our current currency, and you know it's running
David,
out.
What would happen if local communities formed little businesses and you know, built their own plants for their constituents. What do you think?
We have several municipalities talking with us about that right now because, you know, as you pointed out earlier, George, cattails make a great crop for alcohol. Now,
yes.
You know, municipalities and cattails, like, what's that have to do with each other? Well, there's this totally renewable resource that's all around us all the time, and it's, well, manure or sewage. In other words, we keep producing it every day, and municipalities have to deal with treating it. Well, it turns out that cattails are one of the ideal ways to finish the treatment of sewage because all the nutrients that are in the wastewaters are used up by the cattails as fertilizer, cleaning the water. And when you release the water into rivers or in the ocean, it's much, much cleaner than if it came out of a normal sewage treatment plant.
That's amazing.
So now we're talking about, instead of getting 250 gallons per acre like we get from corn, 7,500 gallons per acre from sewage-grown cattails. So a bunch of cities are saying, well, even though we're in government, we get this. In other words, if we go ahead and make fuel with our waste product that's costing us money, we now have more money for asphalt to fix our streets. We have more money for everything if we're not spending it on fuel. And guess what? We can actually make an excess and sell it at a reasonable price to our residents, meaning they have more money to spend on the local economy, and that makes everything better for everyone. So, yes, there's a lot of projects that are in discussion right now about how we can take some of our sewage and make it into alcohol. I just finished talking with a couple of agencies in the Santa Cruz area where I'm from, because there's so much runoff from the farms of fertilizer that the water is actually more polluted than as if it was sewage. In other words, the nitrogen fertilizer. So we're talking about diverting some of the runoff water from the farmlands first through cattail marshes and then release it to the rivers so that the salmon and all that can come up the rivers and keep that industry going, the fishing industry going, and harvesting all these nutrients that were going to waste. And as you guys know, waste is not part of my vocabulary. So, you know, harvesting that fertilizer and not letting it go unused and making it into energy solves an environmental problem. At the same time, helps our municipalities be more financially stable. And, gosh, wouldn't it be nice for once if a municipality sold us something cheaper than industry, you know?
If you were to cut a deal with your sewer district, how much would it cost to build a plant near there, or how would you do that?
Well, it depends on where it is and if there's acreage near the alcohol, near the sewage treatment plant, because what we would be building are artificial marshes that we can
harvest the cattails
from.
Okay.
So we need some land. So, you know, it's probably cost less than, last figures I saw for building cattail marshes were less than $20,000 per acre. Well, if you're making 7,500 gallons of alcohol per acre and gasoline is $5, your payback period is, you know, like no time at all. So it's basically really viable to do it. And even if it took 5 or 6 years to pay back, like at today's prices, you're cleaning up your water and you're using your waste. And it's like, isn't that what government's supposed to do?
That's interesting. So you would dump the wastewater in these marshes?
Yeah, you run the partially treated sewage that's already gone through secondary treatment. So it's down to all liquid now, no particles left.
Right. Yeah.
And all the disease has pretty much, you know, been killed. So now you've just got nutrients and water. And you run that through the cattail marsh. The cattails suck up the nutrients. The cattails get 15, 16 feet tall and as big around as
they're like arm. Little trees.
Yeah, like little trees. And the stalks are full of starch. So we can go ahead and process that for alcohol.
You take the whole thing and do that?
Yeah, well, there's several ways we can mow them. And that's part of the research we've been doing is to figure out the best way.
Would you meet with municipalities if you were like a consultant?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Show them how to set it up and everything else.
Well, I helped build the first cattail marsh sewage treatment plant over 20 years ago in California. Now there's 500 of them around the country, but none of them are making alcohol yet. They find it just an economical way to treat sewage.
With the cattails.
With the cattails. But now we can actually turn it into a profit-making venture for a municipality, which, again,
And treat the sewage.
What's that?
And treat the sewage at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, not only that, it takes the mercury out of the water, you know, cattails do, and evaporates it out. So you actually, you know, get the mercury out of the water that's going in to feed fish life.
What about the Prozac that's in the water? You probably end up with happy cattails, wouldn't you?
Well, you know, it's curious. You know, a lot of drugs are estrogenic.
Or depressed cattails.
Yeah, depressed cattails. Well, the fish are so depressed, you know, from all the life in the ocean pollution that they need Prozac, right? Well, cattail marshes actually break down. It's the only way that we know to break down contraceptives, you know, estrogens, et cetera, and also the chemicals that are like estrogen, meaning pesticides and herbicides, in sewage. Cattail marshes are the only way to do that. So we're talking about taking those out of the environment as well and breaking them down into minerals.
All right, let's go now to Jim in Anchorage, Alaska. Welcome to Coast, west of the Rockies. Hi, Jim.
Well, thank you. First-time caller, all-time listener.
Great.
Hey, here's an idea for you, gentlemen, especially your guest tonight. In Alaska, we have some fertile soil up here, and we're known for the biggest pumpkins and stuff like this up here in the Matanzas area.
Yes.
And we also have native allotment, which is the equivalent to after President Clinton signed his way out of the office there, he made the Alaskan native allotment land title holdings reservation status equal to that of the lower 48 Indian tribes.
Yes.
Now, they're not taxed on four or five different things, one being tobacco, one being fireworks, fuel, alcohol to a certain extent, as long as another key ingredient doesn't make it a drinkable alcohol, things like that. So are you working with the native corporations down, or the reservation corporations down in the lower 48, or would you be willing to come to Alaska, do some joint venture with the native allotments up here and the tribal members up here, and start producing this stuff non-taxable?
Well, you know, it's really interesting that you should bring that up. A couple of tribes have brought it up with me here in California, and we're very willing to work with them because one of the ways the oil companies try to restrict the use of alcohol is by using, you know, the air pollution control districts, which they've infiltrated a long time ago, to put up rules that kind of interfere with putting up alcohol stations. But, of course, Indian tribes are separate countries. So, and, of course, there's a lot of tribal lands that are right near population centers. So we could set up a station across the border, so to speak, between America and, you know, the Indian tribe's sovereign nation. So people could come onto the reservation, buy alcohol at a far lower price than they could get gasoline, and we wouldn't be subject to the oil company's manipulation of regulations. So one of my favorite sayings about this is Indian nations could bring fire water to America and save it from oil depletion of the pocketbook, you know. So, yeah, I think there's a real good synergy where Indian nations can save us white people.
It could be. David, we're going to come right back. We're going to take final questions for you. David's website, alcohol can be a gas. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com as well. Those of you on hold, don't lose your place in line by hanging up. We'll be right back with you. Pick up the After Dark magazine and get two classic CDs, Art Bell interviews with Father Malachi Martin on possession and exorcisms. Call 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online at coasttocoastam.com for After Dark. What's your next big push, David? What do you do?
Well, heck, there's so many directions we're trying to go at the same time because this is, after all, a revolution, you know, that we're talking about. We're talking truly about taking that control back. And I was just, you know, sitting here at the break thinking about the last few callers. You know, in the lead up for the show, you talk about how, you know, to really get control of the population, they really have to break our spirit.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
And I'm thinking about the calls we're getting tonight. You know, municipalities talking about, you know, helping on the problem, or, you know, work, you know, Indian tribes, you know, taking care of their own and making this happen. And, you know, one of the reasons why I love hanging out with you, George, is that these people don't have their spirit broken. They're saying, we're not going to go down this road of doom and gloom, oil is running out, the world's going to end. They're saying, no, we can fix this. We're Americans. We're, you know, we're innovators. We're smart. We're tool producers.
They don't give up.
we're not going to give up, and we're not going to get our butt kicked anymore. So, you know, that is where we really need to go next. So what we're working on is on several fronts. Part of what we're doing is educating people about the fact that they can start buying alcohol now, because where we started our show out tonight was about how alcohol plants are going broke because the oil companies are, on the one hand, paying them very little for the alcohol they mix with gas, and on the other hand, you know, jacking up the prices of the raw material. But the answer to this, so that that alcohol companies can make it, and that farmers can make it, and that we can all make it, is if we support each other. So again, if people go out there and first start off by buying alcohol to run their car, that's a huge step, because that's money we're not giving the oil companies. And if we don't give it to them, they don't have it to use against us. Now, you know, we did talk about 50%, but if you want to run 100% alcohol, you can either buy a brand new flex fuel car, which is what we're pushing the car companies to have to do if they want any more bailout money, because they already know how to make flex fuel cars and are making them, but they should make all cars flex fuel, able to run on alcohol or gas. But until they do that, as you asked me about earlier, George, and I didn't really quite answer you, is that we do have kits now, additional computers that you plug into your car that allow you to make any car into a flex fuel car, so that you yourself can take the car you right now have and use anywhere from straight gas to straight alcohol without thinking about it, that the computer takes care of all the adjustments in the car to make it run on both. So that makes it so until we have an alcohol station on every corner, you can use it where it's available, but if you have to go back to gas, you don't pay any penalty. So pushing that forward is a big agenda, because every dollar we can take out of the oil company's pocket and put it back into American farmers and business people's pocket is a dollar put toward good use. And so we think the fastest way we can do that is to get people to start using alcohol even before they might start making it on their own.
Okay, let's go to some final calls here. Let's go to Floyd in Columbus, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Hi, Floyd.
Hi, George.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me. I worked for an alcohol plant in 1986, and they were on the way out of business when I went to work for them. They were controlled by the oil company and Archer Daniels Midland, and we had gotten where we were using high fructose corn starch, apparently, that had been contaminated in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they were charging the company for it, but we worked it off, and we had been using stuff called brewer's concentrate from Anheuser-Busch. And the brewer's concentrate had been the cheap way of making alcohol until ADM came along. I don't know if they were controlling brewer's concentrate too or not, but we had to make $1.25 a gallon gasoline price to be able to sell the product back in 86.
Mm-hmm.
And back then everybody was telling you, well, you can't use it. And I had been like the founder of the company. He was an oil distributor that had raced alcohol race cars. And he figured if we could use alcohol for racing fuel, we could use it on the automobile and for the farm tractor. And he had a bunch of farm customers in his oil business that couldn't pay to harvest their corn back in, well, I think it was 75.
Yes, that was really bad era for farms. The cost of production was above what you could get for the crop.
Why, we had all kinds of government people in and out of that plant. There was ATF people in there twice a day reading our meters.
Jeez.
And they worried over an 8-gallon spill we had when a line broke to the storage tank. Wanted to know where that 8 gallons went to. I can't imagine them allowing anybody to open a plant up nowadays, because bureaucracy is much bigger now than it was in the 80s.
Well, you know, you would think that, except that democracy prevailed. You know, we've had so many people apply for permits that they can't possibly enforce any obsessive rules about all these small plants. And we won that battle in the 80s in a way similar to what we're doing tonight, which is where we announced to everybody that there was a permit that you could get, and 250,000 people applied for it. So three people were all that were empowered to process permits back then, and they came in on Monday to a room full of sacks of mail, you know. And when you confront the government with enough democracy, it pretty much has to bend to your will. You know, the big problem is when there's a few of you doing something different and, you know, you're not the majority. So yes, we do have the legal right to make our own fuel now. And even on the small scale business scale, like 500,000 gallons a year, that permit is pretty easy to get. Now, it's true when you get into the really big plants, like the ones we have out there in the Midwest that are making 100,000,000 gallons a year, you have one or two ATF employees that you pay full time to supervise to make sure none of that alcohol is going off for drinking and the government's getting its taxes, which is really silly, but that is a cost of doing business on the really big scale. But on the really small scale, there's no way to make that stick, and so they don't do it. They couldn't possibly staff it all. Now, I've taught this in other places, like in New Zealand, where you as a citizen have the right to distill your own beverage alcohol. So not everywhere is like the United States. And you got to remember, this is a worldwide revolution. You know, if you displace oil somewhere else, it doesn't matter where you displace it, you're hurting the whole worldwide oil industry. So, you know, a lot of us have a part to play in this, but I'm, like you said, there was an era that we had alcohol being made in the United States, and the oil companies did crush the industry at that time, and they're trying again. But this time we've got the internet, we've got George Norrie, you know, we've got each other, and at the end of the show we'll give you a couple of URLs where you can write to try to stop the sale of these alcohol plants to Valero.
Okay, next up, let's go to Dave in Evansville, Indiana. Go ahead, David.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Hey, before I start, George, you were like, you're my inspiration, man. You kept me going through a couple of years of divorce, and I appreciate that.
Oh, that's our pleasure. Thanks.
Well, I only have one question. Where does the packaging go? All the stuff that you distill, where does the packaging go?
You mean the raw material that we make into alcohol?
Exactly. No. What contains the alcohol?
Sorry?
Well, what contains the alcohol? I mean, you got bottles, you got, where does that stuff go?
Oh, well, we're talking about making alcohol in bulk. So you're putting this in a, let's say, you know, those, where do you live? What part of the country?
Evansville, Indiana.
Okay. Well, you guys heat with fuel oil out there, right?
Yeah.
So you know those big oval fuel oil tanks, holds 275 gallons?
Uh-huh.
Those make really great alcohol storage tanks. They sell them at Home Depot for about $200 or $300, and they have three fittings on the top. And when you distill your alcohol, you put it in that fuel oil tank. In one of the holes on the top, you put your filling pump for your car. One of them's the fill cap, and the other one's the vent. So if you're not making alcohol, you could actually have an alcohol company come out and fill one or two of those tanks for you, because alcohol is sold around the country to be blended with gas. And one of our earlier callers, you know, he was talking about how he used to work for a guy who was delivering fuel to farms. Well, they have these smaller fuel trucks that hold 1, 3, 4, 5 thousand gallons, and they go around and deliver fuel, just like they deliver fuel oil. So you could literally have your fuel oil tank at home full of alcohol, run your fuel oil burner on it, and have your gas pump on the top of the same tank to fill your car with.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, you don't need to mess with any small containers or even drums, for that matter. Although, it's kind of funny. We have a drawing on our site because we're trying to build up a mailing list that we can use to fight some of this legislation problems. And one of our incentives we give you to go ahead and sign up on our mailing list is we give away free conversion kits, and we give away a free alcohol fueling station, which is kind of a joke. It's a drum with a hand pump, you know, full of alcohol. But that's the grand prize, you know.
All right,
you can check
great.
That out on our website.
Thank you so much. Driving around in Oklahoma, Steve, welcome to the program. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
David, I was wondering, on a diesel conversion or any four-cycle engine for that matter, what's the best compression ratio to take advantage of alcohol, and is it feasible to do a diesel?
Well, it sounds to me like you're driving right now.
Right.
Yeah, well, you know, that truck you're driving right now can be converted to alcohol. Diesel engines actually are pretty close to what would be an ideal alcohol engine. So They run on a variety of compression ratios. So for those of you out there who don't know what that means, a compression ratio is the difference between how much space is in your cylinder when the piston's all the way at the bottom versus when it's all the way at the top and squeezing the fuel. So if the space in the cylinder is 1/10 the amount when it's completely full, you know, completely open, that's a 10-to-1 compression ratio. In other words, you're compressing the fuel that much before you fire it. Now, gasoline vehicles, down around 8-to-1 or so, but diesel vehicles, 12, 14, in some cases even 22-to-1. So you squeeze the fuel a lot more in a diesel engine before it explodes. The more you squeeze the fuel before it explodes, the better mileage you get, and alcohol has 105 octane rating. So they have buses in Sweden that run on pure alcohol that run at a 28-to-1 compression ratio and get tremendous mileage. You can get 22% better mileage than gasoline on a diesel-like engine converted to run alcohol. So in the book, we have 6 different ways of running diesel engines on alcohol, and it's pretty much the only place you can get that info because we've collected it from third-world countries like Brazil that has a huge fleet of vehicles that run on alcohol, including diesel engines, or work done by Mercedes back in the 80s to make bus engines run on alcohol. And even Archer Daniels Midland, who was mentioned earlier, actually did research on over-the-road trucks like the one you're driving that they were able to get to run on just about pure alcohol just by having full-time glow plugs. So there was a hot spot in the engine to ignite the alcohol at the right time. So there are practical ways of doing this, and some are really cheap, and some are only appropriate on the assembly line where more expensive things can be done. But we can run both gasoline and diesel engines on alcohol fuel.
What do you think is the best way to go, the small mom-and-pop type operation or the million-gallon-a-year operation?
Well, both of those are mom-and-pop.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, the really big, the big plants are 100 million gallons per year.
Okay.
And I don't like those for a couple of reasons. You know, we're talking about collecting solar energy here. Plants take in the sun. They mix it with carbon dioxide and water and make starches and sugars, which we make into alcohol. So we're really talking about collecting solar energy. Well, that's kind of spread out solar energy. It's not all in one spot. So if you get too big a plant, the raw material has to come from too far away for some of the logistics of running the plant well. So if you have to go 45 miles to get your corn to run the 100 million gallon per year plant, you're not easily able to take byproducts from the plant and drive it back out to the farm and return those to the soil. Because, you know, someone asked earlier, you know, what do we make the alcohol from? And, you know, I said starch. But that means all the protein and minerals and everything else that's still there, left over in the mash, well, we can use some of that for animal feed, but we can also put it back on the ground. And then you're getting rid of the cost of chemical fertilizer, which is made of, well, oil. So a smaller plant, like you were mentioning, a million gallons per year, George, and this is a scale that we're very in favor of for a small business, can fit in a large barn, a million gallon per year plant. And basically, that's about the amount of alcohol you need to supply one or two gas stations in town, alcohol stations in town, that people can buy the alcohol direct from the farmer. Or a group of people can get together and set up a station or two and contract with a farmer to make the alcohol for the station. So this million gallon per year size, or even smaller, is the small business size that makes the most sense because all the byproducts can get used. Like if we're using corn, we can take the byproducts and raise fish or mushrooms or vegetables that can all be sold in the local community. This makes a lot of business sense. But when you make 100 million gallons per year and you've got to get rid of all the liquid that's left over, well, heck, these big plants evaporate all that liquid using a huge amount of energy because they can't discharge all that on the land right around the plant because it would be way too great a quantity. So in many cases, bigger is not better. Bigger does not make for efficiency. That's true with physics, but not with biology. So, I mean, you know, if bigger was better, we'd have 10,000-pound cows to make milk, but we don't because nature has limits to what it does when it comes to biological processes, and that's true of alcohol fuel. So anywhere from 100 gallons a day from your, you know, home plant, even 3 or 4 gallons an hour, a home plant, up to 50, 60 gallons an hour, which is, you know, getting out there around the million gallon per year range. That whole small-scale range is economical and profitable, and I think that's how we employ the most people. You know, by many more small plants making good use of all the byproducts than a few really big ones.
That would do. David, we've only got about a minute left. Get your websites out, please. And Alcohol Can Be a Gas, the book that we've talked about for so long, is it still available?
Oh, yeah, but we're on our fourth printing, and a lot of that's due to you, George. You've really helped us get the word out. So alcoholcanbeagas.com is our website, and you can also give us a call if you're interested in the book at 888-737-6228. And we have workshops coming up. We have conversion kits, and pretty soon we're going to be having possibilities of getting involved in alcohol plant manufacture.
Make a prediction. The end of this year, where will we be?
Yeah.
Price of gasoline?
Oh, this summer we're going to be up over $4 by the end of the year, and the heating oil season will be at $6.
No.
Yep.
That's
I've been right so far, George.
Yeah, you have.
Now, if you have a moment, two quick
20 seconds
to our website for where you can, because these are a little bit long, these websites where you can write and try to stop the sale of the Verison plants to Valero. And we think we need to hear a couple of 100,000 letters to the government to let them know that we mean business, that competition in the fuel market's good, and we don't want to see the oil companies control the whole thing. So we'll have that up on our website in the morning.
All right. Thank you, David. David Bloom, for Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.